Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Kamidoku Podcast. I am Christopher Beljanovsky, and joining me in the virtual podcasting booth, as always, is the man, the myth, the legend, Toasty.
Toasty!
Now, before we get started, I just wanted to thank each and every person who has supported us on this journey. It's hard to believe that we've been around for a whole year, and in that time, we've had so many amazing guests and moments that we'll remember forever. If you're new here, please hit follow or subscribe, and be sure to check out some of our previous episodes. And finally, please share our podcast with your friends and family, as it really helps us out.
Greetings, combatants. We're here for another exciting episode. Joined with us today is Philip Ahn, the very same gentleman who brought Shang Tsung to life in Mortal Kombat 2, often proclaimed as the most critically praised Mortal Kombat title. Philip introduced a lot of new flavor to this particular character, and we're very eager to speak with him about it. We'll also be diving pretty heavily into his astonishing book titled Mortal Doctor, a story of transformation, discipline, and purpose. Philip has been through quite the journey in his life, and this book really gets into the precise detail. We at Kamidoku highly suggest purchasing this book and checking it out for yourself. You'll read through recollections of joy, some trauma, entertaining, hysterical moments, and most importantly, you'll see how Philip Ahn morphed into the man he is today. So, let's ask some questions, get into the details, and proceed with this interview. Hello, everyone. It's a pleasure to be here today. I'd like to start off by saying thank you very much for joining us, Philip.
Oh, thank you. You're welcome. You're welcome, and thank you for inviting me.
For a proper introduction to our audiences, why don't you tell us exactly what you specialize in for your field of work, along with how you, by mere coincidence, happened to get the role of Shang Tsung from Mortal Kombat 2?
Okay, they're sort of related, so I'll tell you that I'll start chronologically. When I was in my first year of medical school, during study breaks, I would do some martial arts at times, and I at times worked out with Ho Sung and Ho Young Pak, and before they became actors or stunt guys really for the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movies. And then later on, Ho Sung as Liu Kang in Mortal Kombat, the video game. But before that, you know, we just worked out once in a while together. And then once I moved on to another campus to finish medical school, they got discovered and became involved with the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movies from 2 on, you know, the original series of from the second one on. And then when I came back to the Chicagoland area for residency in family medicine, which is what I practice today, I just purely by coincidence ran into Ho Sung at a restaurant. And we were just chit-chatting, and I asked him about the movies, and he said a little bit about the movies, but he went on more about this video game that he had just filmed that should be big. And I didn't know much about video games. You know, I didn't grow up playing video games because I was studying. You know, when I was in high school, I played a little bit of Asteroids and Pong. I mean, the original games, maybe a little bit of Pac-Man and so forth. But otherwise, I didn't know much about video games. So when he said video games, it didn't even register to me that how he would have been involved in it. And then, but he invited me to work out with his friends at a club in Chicago where they all trained and hung out, and those guys happened to be, you know, Daniel Pacina, Anthony Marquez, and so forth, and they were all part of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle movies also, and in different form, different roles than Ho Sung, but still. And so yeah. Then what, as I, you know, was working out with them and I went places, I started seeing this arcade game everywhere, you know, everywhere I went. And even when I went on vacation, I remember during residency, I went to Hawaii and I saw games there. Then later on, I went to Europe and I saw games there. So it's like, wow, this is really big. And yeah. So I was working out with them, and they liked what I could do. And I was in shape just like they were. And so the game became really popular, and they and the makers, Ed Boon and John Tobias.
Yeah.
Well, they introduced me to them, and then they had the idea to film a sequel, you know, Mortal Kombat 2. And so Daniel Piscina asked me if I would like to be in the sequel. And the roles that he offered me were either the ninjas, as in Scorpion.
Sub-Zero.
Sub-Zero, Reptile, yep. Smoke. And or young Shang Tsung, who would become young and enter the tournament. Yeah. And so he showed me prototypes, and I said, "Well, you were already the ninjas in the first game, and yeah. They're a little too covered up. I would like to see myself a little more." And so, I chose Shang Tsung.
Excellent.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So Taekwondo is very commonly spoken of in your book, Mortal Doctor. Being a okay. black belt yourself, it reveals that your father taught it to students for a number of years. How fulfilling is it to know that you've carried on in his footsteps?
Yeah, I mean, more than just carrying on in his footsteps in Taekwondo, it's more of the life lessons that I've carried on, which you guys have read about also. But yeah, I've practiced martial arts much longer than I've practiced medicine, even though I have practiced medicine for a long time. And the discipline that I've gained from Taekwondo, but in particular from the lessons that my dad taught us, and my brother and me, and then eventually I taught my students, you know, that has really spread out to the rest of my life, whether it's studying and practicing medicine, or even just, you know, every day, the discipline of, you know, eating healthy, exercising, keeping a tight schedule, making sure my loved ones, especially my daughter, is similar. And she's very similar in terms of very, very disciplined, very dedicated to whatever she sets her mind to, whether it's studying or sports and so forth. So all of that has been, you know, given to me by my father. And in turn, I've carried it out and spread it to other people in my life, significant people in my life.
Absolutely. You've taken part in multiple missions to certain countries in Latin America and beyond. Could you tell our audiences a little about those experiences and the challenges you faced there?
Yeah, so as you guys have read, my first mission was when I was in college. That tradition still takes place today, although during the pandemic they were not able to, but it's called the Wheaton College Honduras Project. And so we were the second group from my college to go over spring break to the Central American country called Honduras by name. For those people who don't know Honduras, I actually didn't know what Honduras was, where it was before I became involved. You know, I was too busy studying to just you know a lot about geography or other things that I wasn't studying, and so I didn't know Spanish, and so but I decided, hey, this is a good opportunity. It's over spring break anyway, so I should take it's my over spring break of my senior year. So by yeah. then I had already done most of my studying and MCATs and applying for med school and so forth. So it wasn't a very pressured time for me to stay and study over spring break, something like that. And so I decided to get involved, and like I said, I didn't know Spanish at that time, but I went and we dug trenches to lay pipes for water, drinking water. Not you, you know, Australia, Canada, USA, we all take things like drinking water for granted, you know, and yeah. and we, you know, turn on our faucets and we automatically get water for washing up mm-hmm. or cooking or anything like that. But a lot of the third world, poor areas, they don't have that, you know, and so that's what the Wheaton College Honduras project mostly does, you know, is lay pipes and build water tanks in poor villages that don't have running water so that each house could obtain running water and or drinking water. I mean, sometimes wow. even after that, they still have to boil the water just because it's, you know, it gets polluted along the way. But sure. but at least they have useful water, you know, mm-hmm. that you and I take for granted. So that was my first mission. And then starting in medical school, I decided, like, whenever I had vacation or opportunities to go, whether it was back to Honduras or Africa, which I've been to a couple of times, and some were short for, you know, like a week to 10 days. Others were much longer, for more than a month. You know, like a couple of times to Honduras, I went for at least a month. And then both times to Africa were at least a month.
Okay.
And then since then, I've also been to Haiti and even Jamaica. When I was invited to go to Jamaica, I knew that by then I was more knowledgeable about the world. So I knew that even though Jamaica is in most Americans and Canadians, maybe even Australians, think of it as vacation spot, but it has very outside vacation spots, it has very poor areas, you know, and a lot of the Caribbean islands do. And so I was glad to be part of that too.
Very nice. I believe you had a difficult time adjusting to schools at a young age in Chicago when you first moved to the US, and that there were bullies that often teased you for a number of reasons. Tell us about some of the positives that came out of that after enduring all that, and how you coped with those particular moments.
So I think you told me, Chris, that your parents moved to Australia from Macedonia when they were 9.
And Germany, yeah.
So, yeah. Oh, yeah. Our family from Korea moved to Chicago when I was 8, and I didn't know any English. English is actually a difficult language. Out of the languages I have subsequently learned or studied, I would say English is still the hardest one that I've had to learn. And so, wow. And when we moved from Korea, I didn't know any other cultures, but we didn't move into an area of Chicago with a lot of Koreans. So outside of our home, we didn't speak to anyone in Korean. And so we just had to get by in school. And kids would, I knew that when kids were making fun of me because I was different, you know, or my siblings were different. And so I was 8 years old. I knew a little bit of martial arts, having taken about 6 months worth in Korea. And so I defended myself or my siblings who, you know, if kids would bully me. And until one time, like I wrote in my book, that one time this one bully, I got tired of him, so I, in front of all his friends, I did a flying sidekick and I knocked him down. And then I remember the reaction that the kids had. They said, "Whoa!" And he was crying. And then the bullying slowed down dramatically after that. I mean, it still went on. Let's face it, even now as adults, people will make kids usually, not other adults, will make taunts, you know, racially based taunting. It just goes on. It's part of life. And so what has it taught me? Just to be patient, not to be foolish in your reactions. You know, I've never, since I've become an adult, I haven't physically had to defend myself. And sure, I could have, you know, but it's better to see the big picture and be patient and
for sure,
and let the authorities handle it, or just realize that, you know, they're going to get their just due, is, you know, sometime. I, as I say many times in my book, let go and let God, you know, it's.
Amen.
Just leave it out of your hands.
In earlier grades, you also mentioned that before the first class would start, it was common to have full-out brawls to distinguish who sits where.
That was just in Korea, not earlier grades, not in Chicago. Yeah. but I just remember it was so weird. I just remember that, like, adjacent rooms, adjacent first grade rooms, for example. Every morning they would, you know, guys would be outside in the hall and taunting would lead to physical fights. I don't know why, but it was just a tradition.
Yeah.
I don't think it still goes on. Because I've been back to Korea. I haven't visited, but I really doubt it. Korea has advanced a lot, changed a lot. I don't even recognize the neighborhoods that I grew up in and so forth. So.
No kidding.
Because it's a very, very rich country.
Very advanced technologically, isn't it now?
Yeah. And it's all through hard work. It wasn't even because of natural resources like gold or diamonds or oil or so forth. It was all hard work.
Yeah.
Hmm. So is it true that you've actually taught Taekwondo to the Chicago Blackhawks?
Since we were talking about hockey, yes, it's been a while. Not the recent group of Blackhawks, but when I was right before I went to medical school, I taught my first student, and then during residency, there's the strength and conditioning coach of the Blackhawks. He was a physician also, and so he hooked me up with. Three others. One main guy who, after he left the Blackhawks, won the Stanley Cup with the Dallas Stars. And
nice.
But he had most of his family back in Chicago, so he had a Stanley Cup party here in Chicago and invited me. And so I got to hold the Stanley Cup. Like I said in my book, I'm not so impressed anymore when they carry it over their head and spin around. It's not that heavy. Yeah. It's about 30 pounds, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
In your book, you mentioned that Wheaton College was infamous for pulling some great pranks, including one with you dressed up as a ninja scaring people with a chainsaw. Can you recall any other type of pranks that you had been involved in?
I was too busy, you know, studying to be involved. I don't think I – no, none that I recall. They have to read the book to
it's a good one.
That was that was a good prank.
I must admit, brilliant.
It scared them, but after they found out it was just a prank, they were okay with it.
good, thank God.
I don't think I could pull that off anymore. Not these days. I think I would go to jail for a day or so.
9-1-1.
Yeah.
So when it comes to Mortal Kombat 2, it would appear that you actually wore your own black martial arts pants and shoes while filming. Mm-hmm. Is that correct?
That is correct. Even though Midway, who made Mortal Kombat and Mortal Kombat 2 and so forth, even though they made subsequently billions of dollars, at that time probably millions of dollars, they were very cheap, you know, and so where we filmed was just a small back office. What we used for prop was very cheap. And then we were told to bring as much of our costume as we have. And so I had black martial art pants. I had kung fu shoes. And then the rest that they supplied was nothing, really. Just a traditional Chinese cap, these suspenders that kept falling off when I was filming.
We've often heard that the clothing was flimsy and that everyone was having wardrobe malfunctions. You know, they were trying to execute their moves, and you know, boots were falling off and sleeves were falling down. And so was that the most challenging part of it, or
no, not really. And then after our fame got resurrected and we started going to shows and so forth, Daniel, I believe, was the first one to have another costume made. I believe Scorpion was the first one. He also has a Sub-Zero one. And so the same guy made me a Shang Tsung costume. And this one is like 1,000 times sturdier than the original.
What I do find very fascinating, however, is how you brought a lot of your Taekwondo background into your character for this game. How open were John Tobias and others when you originally presented some of your ideas for Shang Tsung's stances, special abilities, etc.?
It was a, you know, more except the basic movements, I would say Mortal Kombat, for sure Mortal Kombat, and I wasn't there, of course, but from what Daniel says in his interviews and so forth, it was an evolving process. They were just making things up along the way, including John, you know, and so John, ultimately John and Ed had to decide what actually goes in the game, but we all got to give our input to how our stance should look, which kick would look best, how to punch, how to block, how to sweep, all those things. So it was an evolving process, put it that way.
Yeah.
In your book, you mention some special moves that you had performed during the 4-hour shoot that sadly did not make it to the game. Would you be open to revealing what some of those moves were, by any chance?
Well, so even though I didn't play a lot of video games. I had seen a couple of times, Tekken a couple of times, and there's an axe kick in there, and I said, why didn't they put my axe kick in Mortal Kombat 2? Oh. And then like, I could do a back handspring called a flip-flop, and I did it filming, and so I said, why couldn't, that would have looked cool if I got kicked, and instead of just falling, I did a, flip-flop and landed, yeah. Something like that. Those two, what else? Oh, I understood that, I did a tornado roundhouse kick, but it's a fast kick. So I understood that it was too fast to break it down into film. So those types of kicks or techniques, I understood. But the axe kick and the flip flop in particular, those two in particular, I thought they could have and maybe should have put it in the game.
Would have made it a bit more unique, I think.
Oh
yeah, sure,
for sure. Philip, you've commonly said that your main goal while accepting any new type of role is that you remain a positive influence. In your mind, what type of positivity do you feel your work in Mortal Kombat has really brought forward to fans around the world?
Well, obviously not directly, since Mortal Kombat and Mortal Kombat 2, Mortal Kombat just when it came out, generated controversy because it was so graphic, and probably the first video game to use real characters. And so combining real people with the fatalities and other graphic violence made it very controversial. So that part, I would say not necessarily, although you could say the same thing about, as I say in my book, if I were given the role of a professional boxer or a hockey player or an MMA fighter, as a Christian, would I be okay with it? And by the way, if you guys didn't pick it up, the people I cite as examples are Christians in those fields. And so, Manny Pacquiao, everyone respects him. He's known as a great guy, even though he obviously tries to knock out his opponents, because if you knock him out, then in doing so, you potentially could cause lots of harm, brain damage, and so forth and so forth. So in spite of being in a, I would say, not necessarily the most ideal role as a potential positive role model, I still wanted to use this, and I really genuinely thought that I could use this, any popularity or fame that I gained from this game, to influence people, whether speaking directly or at least if they got to know me, especially once I started practicing medicine and so forth, if they they realized, hey, this guy is not only a Shang Tsung in the video game, or not only a martial artist, but he's also a physician, and some patients have discovered that I am Shang Tsung just by Googling my name. They said, okay, where is he practicing? Or I want to know, his background. And so they put in my name, they search my name, and guess what pops up? It used to, it used to pop up even before anything medically related. Now it's now it's still on the first page usually, but not necessarily the first or one
straight
or two.
Away.
Yeah.
How can I help you today? Oh, I feel like someone's stolen my soul.
yeah. Well, so far, no one has used that line as a chief complaint. They've only They've only brought it up like towards the end of the visit, you know.
Well, in fairness, like if you're missing a soul, you probably should go to ED. One of the best laughs we both had in your book, Mortal Doctor, was the moment you revealed parody ideas for the Mortal Kombat characters. So could you talk a little bit about what these ideas were and what motivated you to create them in the first place?
Oh, we just had, I remember we were in the same hotel room. Daniel was sitting on one bed and I was laying down or sitting down on the other. And we were just waiting for our next event. And I think the it was a very common thing to, instead of saying Goro, say Gordo. You know, Gordo means fat or fatty in Spanish. Right? And Daniel, I don't know if you guys know, but Daniel is Mexican-American, you know. Johnny Cage is actually a Mexican-American person in reality. And so, you know, he and I both spoke Spanish, and so we were joking about Gordo, and then it was very spontaneous, but I just started spewing off what other spoofs for characters that could have been pitched to, let's say, Mad Magazine or some other magazine like that, or just even maybe a, could have been, if this was right now in this age of technology, maybe someone could have just like that made a video game like I'm in one where I'm in one. My character Shang Tsung is Mario. You guys have seen that, right? In Mario Kart.
Oh, okay.
Your face goes in it.
You guys haven't seen it. No? I can't tell you where to see it, but it someone sent it to me. I said, "Oh, this is actually pretty good." You know,
and, that's incredible.
Yeah. So someone could. These days, they probably could have come up with these characters just like that, and given, you know, with the moves and everything that I suggest. Oh, since you're in Australia, one of the characters I came up with was Ru Kang. You know, instead of Liu Kang, where a Joey pops out and throws a low fireball from, you know. And then the bicycle kick is the mother kangaroo lying on her tail and kicking, you know, across.
I actually went to the zoo yesterday, you know.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, my wife was feeding the kangaroos and our son saw them for the first time. And I didn't want to get too close because, you know, those tails are powerful. Right. I could just imagine them standing up and kicking. So it's funny you mentioned that. Exactly.
So I just kept going on and on, and Daniel, he's got a loud laugh, and I like to, whatever I say, because it's usually like witty humor, rather, you know, play on words rather than just, you know, stupid humor. And so he laughed all night when I kept coming up with characters. Yeah.
So it appears your daughter Abigail exceeded in school and accomplished much. You mentioned she lived the high school life you've always dreamed of having. Oh, yeah. Furthermore, she's following the same line of work as you now. Tell us, how proud are you of her achievements, and do you two work closely together to this day?
Well, she's still in college, so we don't work together, but she's finishing her third year, and so she's, you know, she's a straight A student, wants to go to medical school. I'm sure she's way ahead of where I was at her, you know, at her level, at her grade, at her age, and so forth. And she's also a top-notch tennis player. In high school, as I mentioned in the book, she was valedictorian, homecoming queen. And she played two varsity sports same day, like tennis in high school in Chicago. girls tennis and volleyball are in the same season. So she went from one to the other while, you know, somewhere studying and still kept a very, I will tell you, the most proud of I am about her is her character. She is very humble. She's a leader, but she can be a vocal leader, but she's mostly a leader by example. And so she has definitely led the life that I only dreamed of leading when I was in high school and even college. Yes, I love my college experience, but I studied all the time. I mean, all the time, because I didn't know how to study, so I just studied, you know, whereas she is efficient. So she's able to do a lot more things that I wasn't able to while studying.
That's wonderful.
Nice. So before we jump into our last segment of the show, we're going to pick and share with you a few fan questions. So first up is from user, that was my pitch. He asks, despite the initial success of the first game, did you think Mortal Kombat 2 had potential? And what were you thinking during production?
Oh, I absolutely thought it would be a success, because Mortal Kombat 1 was successful because it used real people, but the graphics were like, and so when I saw the graphics for Mortal Kombat 2, I was a little disappointed in terms of the characters being not as real life looking, but still real life enough. But the overall graphics being better than the first one. And then we had more characters, we had more better backgrounds and so forth. And so when I would once in a while, like Daniel, I guess, went regularly to meet with John Tobias to see how the game was coming along. But I only went once in a while. And when I saw, I said, looks pretty good. I mean, if I went more regularly, then maybe those techniques that I mentioned would have made it to the game. But I didn't. I was in residency during, you know, I didn't have all the time to be to get that deeply involved as Daniel did, you know.
User Dr. Hexen asks, what were your initial thoughts on Shang Tsung's character specifically before accepting the role?
Before accepting the role, all I knew was that he was old in the first game, becoming young to enter this tournament in the second game. I only, just like my analogous to my ignorance of video games in general at that time, I didn't know the whole storyline of Mortal Kombat even, you know.
Right.
And so all I knew was that much, and then how it would look, how the prototype looked when Daniel and or John showed, I don't remember who showed it to me. And so that's all I knew. And so I accepted based on that. I didn't know specifically exactly what Shang Tsung would do in the game. And for the most part, they didn't either. Like I said, it was besides the basic movements, like kicking, blocking, and so forth, we made things up along the way, you know. And so
part of a collaborative process.
Yeah, exactly.
As a fan of yours myself, I'm going to put my own question in here. So even though Ed and
yours
John
was number 99, but you're skipping to number 3, right?
Yeah. Exactly. even though Ed and John, I guess they had a pretty basic idea of what the characters would turn out to be. And like you mentioned, they kind of fleshed things out as you went along. Did you happen to put any of your other ideas forward for Shang Tsung? So, for instance, his rainbow friendship, or did you have any input into his fatalities or anything like that?
No, I'm almost positive the rainbow friendship was just made up by John right there when we were filming, when I was doing something else, and he just thought of the rainbow. I believe that's how it happened. Yeah. And then in terms of my fatalities, they must have had ideas, at least for me going into Kintaro and exploding out. That part I would not have imagined. The Soul Stealer, which is the most popular one,
yeah,
probably also was made up on the spot. I don't know for sure because of one of my movements showing this type of movement or something like that. I'm guessing. I don't remember for
you're
sure.
Probably changing a light bulb at the time, and they thought that stance. We can't do that stance. And
that's exactly it.
Yeah. I don't know exactly, but no, I cannot take, I won't take credit for the fatalities in terms of the ideas themselves. I think it just happened more or less spontaneously. Sure. Yeah.
And last but not least, we have MK Sherlock. He would like to know if you have your own interpretation of the phrase, "Your soul is mine." If you could be open to saying this line, it would be most appreciated.
Okay. So, your soul... Okay, I'll say it like this. Your soul is mine. But I'm sure Carrie says it much better than I do in the game. In the movie, I mean. I can't even say his last name because it's a long Japanese last name, even though he's an established actor.
Hiroyuki Tagawa.
Say it again.
Hiroyuki Tagawa.
Oh, wow. You said it well. But anyway, it's just make-believe. It's just fantasy. You know, it's part of Chinese folklore in terms of, you know, there's a sorcerer who could steal souls and so forth. Ironically, since you guys have read my book, and I have an idea, since so far the two books I've written have not been that deep, I have an idea to actually write a very deep book about theology, philosophy, and so forth. Because of that phrase, "Your soul is mine." Because I am very much into philosophy, studying philosophy, studying theology, studying other religions. I majored in religious studies in college, besides pre-med, and so I might. I don't know if gamers would be into reading such a thing, but
I would,
like,
definitely.
But like basically a history of philosophy and theology and world religions and how I arrived at believing and living out what I do, you know, because I to me, I'm not someone that just could go along in life and just accept things blindly. I think about things all the time, you know. Yeah. I have to have good reasons for doing what I'm doing, including my role as Shang Tsung. And and if you guys, since you guys have read my book, not accepting certain roles, you know, not because I'm not judging other people who accept those roles, but I personally don't feel comfortable accepting certain roles because I don't want to be portrayed as promoting those things, you know?
Yeah,
sure.
Now, before we jump into our last segment, actually, you've expressed before that you thought Cary Hiroyuki Tagawa was quite good in the role of Shang Tsung, and you thought the 95 movie was okay, but
okay.
Did you happen to see the newer movie, and what's your opinion on Chin Han as the sorcerer?
Yeah. So Carrie was good as an actor, not as a martial artist. They should have had me do his stunts, and they should have had Daniel do Johnny Cage's stunts. Then the movie would have been much better martial arts wise. You know, they had other martial artists that we know, like Chris Casamassa, you know, who played he's an established martial artist.
And yeah.
Keith Cook, who played Reptile, he's an established martial artist. Mm-hmm. Stephen Ho, who played Kung Lao, he's an established martial artist. Kung Lao didn't even have much of a fight scene in Mortal Kombat, the movie.
Oh, Liu Kang's brother.
Yeah. Oh, no. Was that Kung Lao?
No, not Kung Lao. No.
I'm sorry. What was his name? I forgot. Yeah. Whatever his name was.
Yeah, him.
him, yeah. Well, I don't know why I said Kung Lao. You know what I meant. He should have played a more prominent role, I thought, martial arts-wise. And then in terms of the last movie, I thought it was a much better movie overall. Mm. They could have used... The only complaint I had was they used the same lines a little too many times. I believe I only saw it once. So you guys, if you saw it more than once, you could correct me. But didn't they use "Your soul is mine" and then some other fatality more than one time? I thought it was redundant.
They could have. I think he only said it once in the movie, "Your soul is mine," eh, Chris?
Okay. About the latest movie was a little redundant, but otherwise I thought it was overall better than the first movie. And interestingly, because I have not followed all of the Mortal Kombat video games, I don't know the storyline of every one of them.
Right.
I thought for the most part this last movie followed the storyline of Mortal Kombat 2. And so I could look at it or maybe 2 and 3, I don't remember for sure now, but I thought it was easy to follow for all generations of Mortal Kombat fans, you know.
Yeah,
not sure. Just the latest, not only for people who play the latest versions, although even young people, I think, they like the older versions.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely. So, we're about to jump into a segment called...
Final Round.
Okay.
And so what we're going to do for this final round we're going to ask you some sort of rapid-fire questions, try to get to know you a little more. So, okay. First up is, what are some of your secret talents?
Secret talents? Well, not so secret anymore if you read my book, but dancing, you know, social dancing, not bopping around, but organized dancing, you know, yep. Salsa, bachata, swing, so forth. That's one of them. I wish I can play the piano and draw and paint a little, but I wish I did them better, because if I kept it up all these years, then I could actually say that those are also my secret talents, but they're only okay talents. And then I love languages, and so I try to speak at least a phrase or two to whoever I meet in their own language, you know. So that's probably another secret talent I have.
Excellent. Who's your favorite Looney Tune? I know you're a big fan. You mentioned it in the books.
Yeah. Well, no. It's not because I'm a huge fan, but because that was one of the first things we saw when we came from Korea. We watched a lot of TV.
So it sticks.
Yeah, it sticks. Yeah. I mean, Bugs Bunny.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Roadrunner, maybe. I guess, but Speed Racer, actually, if you guys haven't seen the original Speed Racer, that's a cool cartoon.
Did you ever see Space Jam?
The original with Michael Jordan?
Yeah.
I'm sure I did, but to be honest, I don't remember much about it.
Okay.
Yeah.
I thought it was a pretty fun movie.
Okay.
What is your favorite place to travel?
Okay, so that depends. Like, I travel to do missions, as you guys know, but I also, you know, have traveled just for fun. And so it depends on, you know, if I just want to relax, sure, I don't mind going to the Caribbean or Hawaii. But although, even though in those places, I look for things to do, it's hard for me to just be a beach bum, you know. So I'll go snorkeling, I'll go hiking, and so forth. So it depends on what I'm looking to do. Now, after mission trips, like in Africa, I got to go on safaris. I got to see Victoria Falls. Those are things I want to see the world, and I want to see really sights that people only dream about seeing before in their lifetime. So I've already done some of those things, and I want to do more. Now, when I was younger, I also, now some fans won't like this because of animal rights and so forth. But I also got to run with the bulls in Pamplona, and
yeah, right.
Yeah, it's a world famous thing. That's why I did it. But people that I've talked to, I'm sorry to tell you, but people I've talked to, especially in Spain, they don't treat the bulls in general that run with the bulls. I mean, they did. If you guys know the history of it, they had to do it. They had to let the bulls out from to get them into the bull ring. Yes, once they got into the bull ring, yes, it was for a bullfight. So that part people can have problems with, but they just did it because there was no other way to, and so people just started running with the bulls, you know, slowly, and then it became a world famous event. Some college classmates of mine did it during vacation. I said, oh man, I want to do that. And so when I got to do it, I was glad to do it. So,
and unscathed.
Actually, people don't realize, only if you know what you're doing, you should be fine. If you're either drunk or don't know what you're doing, if you have liquid courage, and you try to outrun the bulls or touch them, which you're not supposed to, then you could get in trouble, you know, then you could get trampled or even worse. But for the most part, people don't get seriously hurt doing that. There's only been one American fatality. And ironically, that was someone who was about to enter med school, and he was from the Chicagoland area. But but that was it. The whole time, no Americans have died except him in running with the bulls. I bring that up not to defend that, but just to say what do I like to do when I travel? It's a gamut of things, from going to the beach to exploring and doing things that people only dream about doing, you know, because they see it on TV.
Mm-hmm. What would you say is your strangest fan encounter?
Strangest fan encounter. I mean,
nothing too bizarre.
Nothing too bizarre. Like at a Comic-Con recently, a longtime patient of mine who didn't know about this, and she's no longer my patient, has moved out of state, came up to us when we were signing at our booth because she had just listened to our Q&A session. And so she said, Dr. An, And, you know, this was still while we had masks, so I didn't recognize her right away, but she lowered it and told me who she was. She said, all these years, I didn't know you were. And so, so something like that.
Yeah.
And then one other time. So for the most part, I don't get recognized as Sheng Tsung in the streets, right? And
okay.
But one time I was headed to a festival, nothing Mortal Kombat related, and someone looks back at me and said, "Are you Sheng Tsung?"
Ah,
wow!
Yikes!
Ah. How did you know? and he was a fan of mine, and he was a fan of mine because his mom went to med school with me. So he was a little kid that I had never met before but you know, now he was a young adult and followed me, and so he knew what I looked like. So he happened to so that happened a couple of times. Two different people recognized me at festivals as Sheng Tsung. I was going, wow, yeah, that
something.
If anything, people will call me Liu Kang, you know, because Asian, you know. Yeah. Although I don't get that anymore. But when Mortal Kombat was first popular, sometimes I got called Liu Kang, just, you know, out of racial stereotyping. That's all.
Nah, I can figure.
It went from Bruce Lee to Jackie Chan, and sometimes to Liu Kang. Yeah.
Wow.
It's for the most part, it's back to Jackie Chan now.
What type of music do you listen to?
Music is very important to me, just because it's, when I was growing up, I listened to it just because I was, you know, you guys have read my book. I used to love sappy love songs, you know?
Yeah.
I was a very emotional guy. I still like them, actually.
That's great.
So I have it on in the background, you know, I have it on my computer while I'm typing my notes or looking at my email and so forth. So it will vary from love songs to old music, even big band music, to, you know, 50s and 60s music, to even folk songs like Waltzing Matilda. I mentioned it because of Chris being Australia, but also some pop music and dance music, some Latin dance music, although I prefer to dance to it rather than listen to it. And then any music from either the very late 70s or the 80s era, because that was my heyday. So I remember exactly what I was doing. If a song comes on, you know, that's still popular today, for example, Another One Bites the Dust, for example, I remember dancing to that at parties when I was in high school, you know, Funky Town, just Bohemian Rhapsody. It's popular now, but I remember when it was first popular, listening to it on the radio, you know, like, what I was doing, listening to. So things like that bring me back to exactly what I was doing. I like listening to those the most.
Very nice. What is your favorite food?
That's also I don't have a limit. It's a big range. And so, yes, for the most part, I like to eat healthy. So, for example, I try to avoid a lot of greasy foods or red meat or other greasy foods. It's not that I don't enjoy a hamburger and fries once in a while. But I love fish. I love seafood in general. Mm. Okay. And then I would say if I had to choose a continent, it would be Asia, but not Korean necessarily. I like Korean food, but I also like Chinese food. I like Thai food. I like Japanese food. Anything overall, overall Asian. But I really like seafood. Seafood is my favorite.
Oh, excellent. What is the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Been given? I say it in my book, but I would say, don't chase money. Get good at what you do, and money will it'll come to you. So, you know, whatever you want to do in life, become good at it. Invest your passion and your talents into it, and your time into your talents, I should say. Then it'll just take care of God. You know, I believe in God. I believe in making the most of the talents that He has given you. Then things will He'll take care of things. You know, I genuinely believe that.
Absolutely.
Well said. Well said.
And final question seems to stump many, but we'll see if you can pick one out of the bag here. What's the funniest thing that's ever happened to you?
Funniest thing that ever happened to me. Funniest thing that ever happened to me. Wow.
Or just a funny memory that you have that
While I think about that, let's throw in a bonus question. So it gives me time to think about it. What's a bonus question?
That puts me on the
spot. You have a bonus question?
What's your favorite color?
Oh, black.
Black.
not only because black belt, but I like black cars. I like the song "Painted Black" by the Rolling Stones. Just black to me symbolizes strength. So
yeah,
nice.
Yeah,
yeah.
So black. Funniest thing that ever. Oh, I. This is one of them, but
okay.
And again, I mentioned it in my book, but when I went on a blind double date, you know, I asked my friend to ask this girl who's I only knew, you know, I saw a picture of, I was a junior, she was a freshman. So all the incoming freshmen, we get to look at what, you know, the picture they submitted to get into college. I said, get me a date with her, you know, because I was too shy and too busy. But he and I wanted to go to this college music festival. And he had a date just as a friend. And I said, okay, get me a date with her. And he did. So, he was driving. His date was in front. No, was he? She in front yet? I don't know. But anyway, she comes out, my date, and she's 6 feet tall. I said, oh, no. Oh, no. So I asked my friend, I said, do you mind if we switch dates? Because his date was only about my size or maybe an inch shorter. And so.
Right, right.
So he said, yeah, that's fine. So we did. And it was none of it. We didn't go on romantic dates anyway. We just needed female companions to accompany us to this college music concert anyway. So it turned out fine.
Yeah.
Nice.
Well, Philip, we really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedule. It's been a lot of fun, and we're excited to see what comes up next for you. For the people listening to our feature today, where can fans find you on social medias?
They could follow me on Instagram, and then they could follow me on Facebook on my fan page. I do have a personal page, but that I really try to limit it to my friends and family. So my fan page is Philip on MD Shengsong MK2, just like that. Yeah.
And so, did you want to take a moment to plug your book as well?
Oh, of course. Yeah. And then Amazon has my two books, Mortal Doctor and Mortal Discipline. Please leave a review if you read it. I'd be very pleased. And then just look for. Oh, I do have a Mortal Doctor website. So you,
okay.
So you could follow me there too. I should update it. I try to update it when I go to events and so forth. So if you guys, if this interview, whenever you guys, you know, finalize it,
yeah,
send me a link and I could put it on there.
Fantastic.
Yeah. Fantastic. Will do. We'll be sure Great. To do that.
All right.
All right. Well, I hope you have a wonderful day and we look forward to speaking with you again sometime.
Thanks.
God bless.
Likewise.
Right.
All right. You too. God bless.
And there we have it. We've come to the conclusion of today's episode. We hope you thoroughly enjoyed. Once again, be sure to look into purchasing Philip's inspiring book. You can purchase a physical copy at Amazon, as he said, or even find it at Walmart. Lastly, you can also listen to the autobiography on the platform Audible, which is quite convenient for a number of people. Do keep in mind, if you find yourself really enjoying this book, he also has the other one titled Mortal Discipline. This one focuses more on the lessons that he has learned and engages readers on the tenets of Taekwondo. Thank you very much for the kind support, and we look forward to seeing you in the next one. You know how it goes. Have fun, stay safe, and
stay flawless.